You get some lube in your mouth. We've all been there. How would you like some flavored lube?
Geek Dudes Radio.
No one to hear you, baby, just me.
He lives with his mom and his whale penis.
I'm the juggernaut, bitch!
What you would imagine you would hear if you got raped while playing Tetris.
Visit our website at www.geekjuicemedia.com.
Welcome, nerds, once again to a fantastic audio-only episode, as though there were any other kind episode of Geek Juice Radio. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Tonight is number one in a multiple-part series where we will be defending ourselves and our tastes. But before that, speaking of tastes, you know those kind of nights when you get, it's dark and you're in the heat of the moment and some stuff happens and you get some lube in your mouth? We've all been there. How would you like some flavored lube? Me too. You can get that at adamandeve.com. You can get, let's see here. I told Jowski that I did not need the copy for this, and I may have been wrong. But I believe you can get 3 DVDs, 50% off a single item, free shipping in the U.S., the 3 DVDs being free, by the way, and a mystery gift, which could be the flavored lube that I mentioned earlier. In fact, I hope that it is. All by using the promo code JUICE, J-U-I-C-E. So happy wanking to you. Let's get to the show. We're going to be going cast member by cast member in the coming weeks. We have all been asked for 4 movies that we have always had to defend to our friends and family. Movies that most nobody else likes. And as luck would have it, tonight is my night. So we'll be talking about 4 of my favorite movies that I'm sick of having to defend to people. And let's begin with The Lady Killers.
Well, let's begin with introductions.
Yes, I'm getting ahead of myself. Sorry about that. Tonight we have got Alex Jowski with us.
Hello.
And first time, as far as I know, which is not a whole lot, but possibly the first time on Geek Juice Radio, give it up for Cecil, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Yes, actually, this is the first time I've been on.
Ah, good. I forget things.
Tell us a bit about yourself, Cecil, since it's your first time.
Yes.
I do a little show called Good Bad Flicks, where it's kind of in vain with what we're going to be talking about this evening. I take movies that are either unknown or underappreciated, box office bombs, and I talk about them in length, kind of make some jokes about them. But at the end, all the movies that I do are movies that I genuinely enjoy. And then once I kind of go through the movie, at the end of the review, I kind of talk a little bit about the history of the film. Sometimes that gives a little more story into what went wrong, why certain movies didn't turn out the way that they should have. And it just makes the whole thing a lot more interesting, I think. So, yeah, that's kind of my gig. Oh, it's goodbadflix.com, but you can also find me on Geek Juice.
You are doing the Lord's work, Cecil.
Thank you.
Yes, and our topic for the next few weeks is movies that we each feel don't deserve their bad reputation, so.
Right, because a lot of movies that are really bad got that way for a good reason, and they do deserve the reputation. But every now and then you'll find one that you really like, and everyone else just meets you with blank stares when you try to talk it up.
Yep, so first on your list, you had Lady Killers.
Yes, this is, at the time, this was the first remake that the Coen brothers have ever done. And I still think this is a case of audience expectation given a good track record. Because the Coen brothers, I think we can all admit that they're some of the best American filmmakers of our time. I think there's no get around that. And whenever they do a remake, people are already suspicious, and unless it's perfect, they're going to jump all over it and say, ah, the Coen brothers sold out, they're not even doing their own scripts anymore, and all manner of unfair shit like that. The Lady Killers, I really, really like. I saw it when it was in its theatrical run. Jowski, when was that?
Oh, I can't even remember. 2000, 2001?
Because you
2004.
Saw it. 2004, that's right.
2004, much later than I thought.
You saw it in the theater as well, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
It was just great. I mean, this is coming from a dude who does not like Tom Hanks. Not a big fan. I think he makes the same movie over and over again, whether it's about World War II or space or what have you. I thought Tom Hanks was amazing in The Lady Killers, and that soliloquy of his at the end of the second act, when they successfully pull off the robbery, that just seeing that in the theater reminds me of why I like movies. That was a great moment.
Yeah, his soliloquy is very Shakespearean almost. He's like, we band of few. It sounds like that Henry V speech.
Yeah, exactly. Like Colin Firth, not stuttering.
Exactly. Now, thing with Lady Killers, I never knew. I mean, I knew it was a remake, but I've never seen the original.
The original was pretty good. It was Alec Guinness and Peter Sellers. They were renting a room in an old lady's basement, which was next to a casino. It's pretty much the same plot. I don't think it was a riverboat in the original, because it was in London. And they do not have riverboats there. They just don't. But it turns like from robbery, which is bad, but also murder fueled by greed, which I think the argument could be made is a lot worse.
Now, I was wary when I first watched Lady Killers because it being a Coen Brothers comedy, and their track record was at Raising Arizona, which is really good.
Yeah.
And Hudsucker Proxy, which that's like you love it or you hate it. There's no middle ground on that one.
Well, this is what I really like about the Coen Brothers. If you look through their entire filmography, they have a pattern that they follow. They'll do like one serious, like gritty, violent drama followed by like a live-action cartoon comedy. Because you had like Blood Simple, Big Ed Raising Arizona. Let's see, after that came Miller's Crossing, then came Barton Fink. It escapes me. But every time you have a comedy, it's usually preceded by like a really heavy drama. You know, like Fargo came right before Big Lebowski. Burn After Reading came right after No Country for Old Men.
And with Lady Killers, it is a very dark comedy.
Yeah, it is. It's got a higher body count than most comedies have.
The thing I liked best about it was the person that plays the old woman. I can't remember the actress's name.
The actress's name is Irma P. Hall.
She looked, sounded, and acted like Wanda Sykes in old lady makeup.
Yeah. I believe she was found like a really big open call search of the Coen Brothers.
She does that role perfect.
Cecil, have you seen it?
No, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Coen Brothers, but this one, I don't know, it didn't appeal to me from like the trailers and whatnot. Like normally, I love Fargo, I love No Country for Old Men, I love Big Lebowski, but this one, I don't know, it didn't do it for me, so I never actually watched it, and then I just kind of forgot about it. So now that you're talking about it, I'll check it out. I don't have anything against it. It was just one of those movies that I was like, I'll watch it eventually. And then it just kind of, you know, fell by the wayside. So yeah, I'll definitely, I'll give it a view. I'm sure it's very well made. I mean, they always make, you know, meticulous movies, whether they are comedy or they are serious. So yeah, I'll definitely give this one a view.
I remember I saw it when it was in the theater. I really liked it. And then when it came out on DVD, I didn't get it right away. Probably money concerns, but then as soon as like Hollywood Video was offering it previously viewed, I picked it up and I watched it a few times, and then a couple years went by and I got this book for my birthday from my wife called The Gospel According to the Coen Brothers. Have you guys ever read this? It's written by I want to see Kathleen Falsani. She's like a theologian, religious writer, and she just picks apart the religious subtext of every Coen Brothers movie. Like, this book came out even before A Serious Man came out.
Huh.
It was really cool. Like, they were talking about the movie before it was even released. And it was a great book. And The Lady Killers, coming so soon after Fargo, they made she makes the case that Fargo represented a graceful, loving God, painting Marge Gunderson as like a Christ figure, you know, like the Immaculate Birth and everything. And she painted Mrs. Munson from The Lady Killers as a judgmental God. God who, like, Old Testament, like, raining sulfur, I'm going to jack you guys up because you're pissing me off and I've had it. Like, that's the kind of God she represented.
And she is a very religious woman. Religion actually does play heavily into this one.
It does.
There's the entire soundtrack is, like, Southern gospel hymns.
Well, it's, like, mixed with Southern gospel hymns, some, like, really angry hip-hop. Like, for Marlon Wayans' character, like, I know the Nappy Roots are on there. T-Bone Burnett, I think, produced the soundtrack.
And constantly at the beginning when she's talking about that hippity-hoppity music, she keeps talking about, I left my wallet in El Segundo.
Exactly.
Which I had to look up, and it's a Tribes Called Quest song.
It is. It's a really weird song. Like, Because that was the first I'd ever heard of it. So eventually, like enough times, I would watch Lady Killer's Curiosity would get the best of me. So I looked up Left My Wallet in El Segundo, and that's a really bizarre song.
What time frame is it? Is it modern times?
Yeah, it's set in modern day, although Tom Hanks's character is like a big anachronism. He dresses kind of like Mark Twain, but he's got like a widow's peak and a goatee. He's like Edgar Allan Poe doing a Mark Twain impression.
Yeah, and he speaks very archaic phrases.
Yeah, and he has like a foghorn leghorn kind of lilt to his voice.
I always thought he was more like a Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, he's got a big Colonel Sanders vibe happening too. It's cool. Like, movies like this, I really like ensemble pieces. Like, if I had to choose between an ensemble piece and, like, a vehicle for one star, I'd always go with an ensemble piece. And movies like this are why. It's kind of built on the individual performances and the characters.
Main characters that are the criminals here. You got Tom Hanks as that very learned Southern professor.
Professor G.H. Doyle.
Yes. G.H. Doyle, Ph.D., because people are like, that's a lot of letters.
Yeah. Ph.D., and... like, FUD?
And Marlon Wayans has he runs the security at the casino. No, he's a janitor.
He is Dwayne McSam. He is like the inside guy of the riverboat casino in Mississippi that they're robbing.
And he is the most like stereotypical like ghetto gangsta.
Yeah, like gigantic ego chicken hawk kind of posturing, just everything that you've ever read about about like stereotypical gangsta. That's Marlon Wayans in this movie.
J.K. Simmons is a demolition expert.
Yes.
He works on film sets. He does props and stuff.
He's like, his name is Garth Pancake.
Yes.
And his common-law wife is named Mountain Girl. And yeah, he's like an explosives expert for special effects.
Like they're doing a commercial at the beginning, a dog food commercial, and the dog doesn't have like a war canteen. And J.K. Simmons is like, well, I've decided to put him in a vintage World War I gas mask, and the dog suffocates.
Yeah, like it's this bulldog, and the bulldog passes out. The director of the commercial is freaking out, so J.K. Simmons just like rips off the mask, and he's like, I'm not gonna lose you, and he starts giving a bulldog CPR.
And interesting about that scene, because the guy from the Animal Humane Society that doesn't have any lines, he just keeps looking over, is Bruce Campbell.
It is. It was Bruce Campbell plays an ASPCA guy on set, like a Humane Society guy to make sure that the animals aren't harmed. And while J.K. Simmons is giving CPR to this bulldog, he's just like off in the corner kind of looking over someone's shoulders like, eh.
And then you have like this completely tacit Chinese martial arts guy.
Yeah, he's a Buddhist, but he's like a militant like self-defense guy, like barely says anything, like he only speaks in proverbs. He runs a donut shop, because like in the first act you meet all these people through like some sort of disjointed vignettes that come, and he has a donut shop with his wife. They get robbed by two guys. Lightning quick, he jams two fingers up the gunman's nose, slams him down on the counter. Like, it was a really cool move. Like, I'm surprised I haven't seen this happen in real life more often. Like, it's effective.
And the last one is this, like, really dumb football jock.
Yeah, like a young dude from a high school football team. Just like a gigantic, can barely speak and use words.
Yeah, and they're all pretending, their cover is pretending to be a, like, chamber orchestra.
Yeah, like a Rococo ensemble. And the way they get into this house is Tom Hanks' character answers an ad in the paper about a room for rent, and it's in this old church lady's house. And
she has a root cellar that they dig their tunnel in while pretending.
Yeah, like not even, like, doesn't even have walls, like it's just a dirt wall, and they can build a straight tunnel to the counting room in the casino. But, like, it's not exactly plausible. Like, shit like that will never line up that well in real life, but it was just such a good movie.
It is. Now, the next one on your list is one that I'd never heard of until you put it on there, Double Whammy.
Yeah, no one has ever heard of this except for, like, really hardcore Dennis Leary fans. Those are the only people I've been able to even talk to about this movie. And they don't like it because they sort of see it as, like a sellout attempt by Dennis Leary, because he's not doing his regular shtick. He's kind of playing a romantic lead, like a hero.
Yeah, and he's kind of, like, in pain all the time, and he's a loser actually in this one. He's a loser cop, and he sees Elizabeth Hurley as his chiropractor, and his partner on the force is Steve Buscemi, has like this closeted gay guy that keeps talking about Dennis Leary's ass the whole time.
Yeah. It's have you ever seen this one, Cecil?
This is another one that I also missed. I mean, I am shocked I never even heard of this one until a couple days ago, because with the cast, you know, it's not that old. I mean, it's from 2001, so right. And it doesn't sound that bad at all. It's just for whatever reason, the studio, did they even release it in theaters, or did they just dump it straight to video?
I don't think they released it in theaters. I think because it was a joint venture between Dennis Leary's company, Apostle Productions, and Tom DeSillo. You're not familiar with Tom DeSillo? Don't worry, because not a lot of people are. He's not like really underground. He just hasn't made a whole lot of movies. The first movie of his I saw was Living in Oblivion, which I believe was 1997 or 98. Where Steve Buscemi plays a low-budget filmmaker, and it's like divided into two dream sequences and one sequence in reality. But based on how much I loved that, I picked up Double Whammy, again, previously viewed from Hollywood Video. This one was on VHS. And I must have watched this just several times, because soon after I picked it up, my cable went out, so I was just left watching whatever movies I had, and I just kind of kept this on a loop. It was just a really good movie. It has like a... Again, it's pretty much a movie built on supporting performances.
You've also got Louis Guzman in a great role.
Yeah, he plays Dennis Leary's landlord in the Super. He
constantly fighting with his daughter.
Yeah, like at great length. And the daughter is Melanie Diaz, the chick from Be Kind, Rewind.
Oh, yes. That's where I recognize her.
And like Hamlet 2 and stuff. She's a really good actress. And this was the first thing I ever saw her in. She must have been like 16, maybe.
Well, yeah, she's playing like a high school girl. Because she's trying to get a tattoo with all her school buddies.
Yeah, Ladybugs, all of them.
Yeah, and they all have like their bug names. I'm Ladybug, you could be Babybug.
you're Bug Spray, you know? Like, so and, there's Luis Guzman and his daughter. They're fighting, and there's like this murder plot between her trying to get these guys to violently rob her own dad, so that she can get money to pay for a tattoo. I think, in fact, that was never really made clear. It's not a perfect script, like, plot-wise. Some of the story beats are kind of confusing when dealing with those many characters.
I didn't know if she was hiring these guys to kill her dad or just rob him.
Yeah, I thought it was just rob him, and then they just got kind of carried away and wound up killing him. But the story then kind of shifts to these two just sub-illiterate fucking thugs. Like any filthy thing for a buck.
Oh, yeah, and their names are like Jojo and Pong, Ping Pong.
Jojo and Ping Pong, yeah.
And that's what the great names on these. What was the other, with Joey Pancake or whatever?
Yeah.
Garth Pancake.
Garth Pancake.
And Mountain Girl.
And Mountain Girl, and now Ping Pong. It's fantastic.
I tend to gravitate towards awesome character names.
The oddest subplot you have is, like, these two guys that live in, like, an empty apartment. Like, all they own is a chair and a laptop.
Yes.
They wear these matching orange suits, and they're writing a screenplay.
Yeah, this is Donald Fazian from, Turk from Scrubs, and Keith Hobbs. And this is one of only two movies I've ever seen that dude in. But they're, like, these two guys who are writing a screenplay, and they'll get sidetracked, like, so when we're at con and they call our names, like, do we go up the stairs at the same time, or do I go before you? Do you go before me? And, like, the screenplay's not even written. And, like, how you meet these characters is they're in the apartment furnished with, like, a desk, a laptop, and, like, there might have been a bed. And that's about it.
They have a chair that they have a mannequin tied to.
Yeah, it's, like, it's not really a mannequin, it's just, like, the torso only... Like self-defense training, it's like a punching bag, only it's shaped like a dude. They have one of those tied to a chair, and before you even know they're writing a screenplay, it opens up with them just with this dummy tied to a chair. He's like, okay, so I walk in, Chinese food is already delivered, I take my chopstick, stick it in this guy's ear, and he takes off a shoe, pounds it into the dummy's ear. He's like, and look at that, he's got a chopstick in his head. And his friend is like, nah, man, that's too quick, and he pulls out this bag of darts that he got like at a Costco or something, and he starts throwing darts at the dummy. And he's like, now see, that's real pain. And I still got three darts left. And then they just do like this happy dance of glee. And one of them runs over to a computer and says, interior warehouse.
And they keep talking about like using symbolism in their script.
Yep. He's like, the French bug out for shit like that. We got to have symbolism.
Yeah. And they don't quite know what symbolism is. He's like, he picks up the same darts we were using. That's that symbolism shit, you know?
Oh, that's crazy symbolism, yo!
And the other thing with it, you have Dennis Leary has a... He's being called a loser cop because he's at a fast food restaurant ordering food, and guy comes in to do like mass shooting of the... Starts killing everybody at the fast food store. And
yeah, what was not a robbery. Like this, like he smashes his truck into the front of the restaurant, then gets out and just starts picking people off with a rifle.
Yeah, so Dennis Leary turns to stop him, but his back goes out, and he slips on a ketchup packet, knocks himself out, and then a little 9-year-old kid picks up his gun and saves the day.
Yeah, it takes out the dude with the rifle. Years before that, his wife and child were killed in a car accident. Like, they were hit by a car. They were walking up the street in New York, and a car came out of nowhere. He couldn't get there in time. He'd, like, stayed behind to buy the paper. He couldn't get to him in time to save him, so he's, like, haunted by that all the time. Right now, he goes to work every day, comes home, smokes hash, watches an aerobics tape. And he's, like, doesn't even jerk off the aerobics tape. He just watches it and just sort of spaces out.
And, yeah, so he's seeing for his back. He sees Elizabeth Hurley, the chiropractor, and they develop a relationship, and he starts to develop more self-esteem.
And at a certain point, the stories kind of come together where the two guys that are writing the screenplay live a couple of apartments down from the cop. Let's see here. How does that go? Because I love the way they have like the third act. I think they ask him for help because they find out that he's a cop. They see him on the news after he screws up the shooting. They see him on the news, so they ask him for help. So he comes over. And they tie him to the chair to see how he would react, because they want to write realistically. While he's tied to the chair, JoJo and Ping Pong bust in because a couple of nights previously they killed Luis Guzman.
Well, they didn't kill him.
Well, yeah, they attempted to kill him. He actually winds up surviving, but they attempted to kill him. And they were worried about witnesses, so they bust into this apartment. Dennis Leary's already tied to the chair. They tie up the two screenwriters. Dennis Leary actually gets like his redemption there by saving these guys. Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, the dialogue was really good. Like, the scenes with Dennis Leary and Steve Buscemi as cops, like, just... There's two or three scenes that pretty much lift out of the movie, but they're just awesome in and of themselves, where they're just driving around on patrol talking to each other.
The one role in there, before we move on, was the rival police lieutenant.
Chris Noth.
Yeah, I thought that guy was Hank Azaria until the end of the movie.
You thought that was Hank Azaria?
I thought that was Hank Azaria.
Maybe if you, like, started juicing...
So next we have Dylan Dog.
Right. Did you wind up watching this one, Alex?
Actually, no, I didn't.
Okay.
I have actually seen this one. I've seen this one a few times.
What are your thoughts on this?
I liked it a lot. It's one of those movies that I had actually known about it for, well, there was a movie that came out in the early 90s called Cemetery Man.
That was Rupert Everett?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And I love that movie, but the director of that movie had talked about how one of the movies that he wanted to make was Dylan Dog, which was based off of this comic book. And so way back then, they were trying to make this, this movie, and it went through all kinds of turmoil, and, you know, it was going to be made, and then it wasn't going to be made. It went through different studios, and different people had the rights, and then finally it gets made, and they put a decent amount of effort into it, and then they just dumped it. Like, I think they put it out in a couple theaters, and mostly it just went straight to DVD. I liked it because it was kind of like a film noir mixed with a little bit of the TV show Supernatural. It had a very like Buffy the Vampire Slayer vibe going. I just thought it was neat the way they did it. I thought Brandon Routh did a really good job in the title role. And it seemed like this one, I've never read any of the comic books, so I don't know, but apparently it was really not faithful to the comics at all. So all the complaints that I saw, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was clearing my throat.
Oh, okay. You sounded like you were rearing up or something. I'm like, ooh.
My bad.
No, it's all right. From what I've read, it seemed like most of the complaints about the movie were how it wasn't faithful enough to the comic. And I'm cool with if a movie isn't faithful to the source material, but it's still a good movie, then I'm kind of cool with that. Because if you look at the X-Men movies, they took liberties all over the place. But for the most part, most of them still ended up being really good movies. And I thought this was cool. So I don't know what – I think sometimes people just want to have something to complain at. They just attack this movie for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. And I think another part of it is when it, if it had come out shortly after Cemetery Man, because Cemetery Man was like 98?
94.
94, okay. So if it had come out like sometime shortly after 94, that would have been a much better time for it, because I think Dylan Dog kind of got screwed because it came out at the wrong time. By the time it finally came out, just entertainment in general was just lousy with like vampires and werewolves and crap like that. I don't know. I think the story is ahead of its time, and the movie came out too late. And as far as being faithful to the comic, it's true that it's not very faithful to the comic book, but that was not a huge hindrance for me because I had never heard of the comic until I first saw the trailer for the movie. This was like a good 3 or 4 months before it came out in a limited release. So in that interim, I got on the internet and looked up the comic books, and I read a few of them that were online, and it's a really good comic, but I think it's a really good movie too. And like my favorite aspect of the story, and they actually concentrated more on this in the movie than they did in the comic, was Marcus, his assistant. He was my favorite character in the movie. It's played by Sam Huntington. As much as I love that guy, he may have been part of the problem, because this was when season one of Being Human was out. So he was like, just seeing him, it was like synonymous with werewolves and vampires and stuff. Throughout the movie, he's like Dylan's assistant. He is working with him, helps him on cases. And at a certain point, he gets bit by a zombie. And the movie is kind of like Warm Bodies without the teen romance angle. Just his story in it, where he's coming to terms with being a zombie, he's like going to support groups. And like when he first wakes up, they're trying to get him fixed. There's this chop shop for people where zombies go to get parts replaced. And so they take him there, and when he wakes up, he has a black man's arm, and he's freaking out. And like my favorite line in the movie is when he says, "Yeah," when he says, "Sorry, they didn't have Caucasian in your size." And I mean, just the scene where he punches a werewolf with silver knuckles—that is just awesome in concept. I don't know. It was a really cool movie. Like if they made a sequel to this, I would see it tomorrow.
Oh, I'm right there. Absolutely. I'd love for them to continue the series. And it wouldn't cost that, you know, that much considering. I mean, look at how, you know, when they're dumping $200 million into something, I think this cost like $20 million. But still, if they followed it up and maybe cut it in half, maybe dialed it back, didn't try to make it as overarching as they did with the whole, with the big demon thing coming out. And yeah, they absolutely could do this for a lot less and still keep it good. It would even make for an awesome TV show.
Yeah, it would. Like, I would watch that as a show. Mm-hmm. Like, if they made Dylan Dog versus Ash, I would see that twice. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I think another thing that hurt it, too, because I was talking with a friend of mine about this, he didn't want to see it because he said that the name was stupid. And
what was the subtitle? I had trouble remembering that.
Dead of Night.
Yeah, Dylan Dog, Dead of Night. And I think that could have been like one of the storylines in the comic.
Yeah, that I don't know. I just think that he was like Dylan Dog. He's like, it sounds like it sounds like a movie about animals or something. I'm like, oh, come on, guy, like really, you can't watch the trailer.
That's enough to stop you from seeing it. That's kind of harsh.
Well, I mean, yeah, people are nitpicky with stuff like that. It's funny how some stuff works and some stuff doesn't, and what people choose to focus their energies on.
Yeah, like when Office Space came out, I didn't even know what the term Office Space meant. If I was going to be nitpicky about that title, I never would have saw that, and that is awesome.
Office Space is fantastic, although at the time, nobody did see it. I mean, it bombed in the theater. So, I mean, it became a cult hit after the fact. But yeah, like nobody went to see it in the theater, which was a shame. But thankfully, it kind of had its comeuppance on DVD, much like Idiocracy, where nobody saw that. But that was also the studio buried that one.
Yeah, I don't know, because Dylan Dog is kind of the same thing. There was no marketing angle that you could take for a movie that hadn't already been done very recently.
No, I can see why the studio would bury Idiocracy. It hits too close for home for them.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It does. Like, probably watching Idiocracy at the same time they're reading a script for Ass.
They're like, oh god, I named my son Upgrade.
Upgrade.
Either that or they're watching it and they don't get it. They're like, wait, what do you mean, President Camacho? This could all really happen. Yeah, I love that movie.
That's another one that I've had to defend to a lot of people, for all the wrong reasons, by the way. People that don't get it. Like, that movie was stupid. I'm like, really? The movie was stupid?
That's kind of, you're missing the point.
Yep, and you're kind of proving the movie's point.
Yes, I actually have a can of Brondo in my fridge.
That is awesome. Where did you get that?
They sold them for a brief period around the time when the movie came out, like as a promotional thing to tie in with the movie. And I was like, I have to get this. So I got I got two cans of Brondo, and because it's got electrolytes. I also got a Brondo t-shirt. Well worth the $20.
The Brondo t-shirt I've seen, but like are the cans like energy drinks or something?
Oh yeah. I'll actually I'll take a picture and I'll put it up.
Nice.
And they're huge. It's like really like the tall boy cans.
Yeah.
And it looks just like it does, you know, Brondo. It's got electrolytes and it's like, yes.
Electrolytes, so what's in Brondo?
You want us to drink out of toilet?
How come I ain't never seen no plant grown in no toilet? You sure you're not the smartest guy in the world?
I remember I had a DVD set, kind of came with a bunch of stuff for Office Space. Came with like the Jump to Conclusions mat and a red swing line stapler and...
Yep, I got that. The Case of the Mondays button.
Yeah.
The Inatech coffee mug. I still have
mine. It came with the coffee mug and everything.
That was cool. Like the big banner that says, is this good for the company?
Yeah. Another thing I didn't like was it was a red swing line mini stapler.
Yeah, that did not work. Like, I still have mine. It's on my desk, but I'm not going to use it as an actual stapler. It was terrible.
Well, you just have to have, like, somebody come over and just take it. But that's my stapler.
Well, now whenever I watch it and Milton says it doesn't bind up as much, I say, bullshit, Milton!
And the last one on your list, Charlie, is one that actually I believe all three of us have seen, Slither.
I love Slither. I've had to defend this movie a lot, mostly to Josh Hadley.
Well, that's because Josh hates James Gunn.
He really has issues with James Gunn, and I don't understand why. I love James Gunn.
How can you hate James Gunn? He's one of the good guys.
I mean, I think his big beef was the Scream Queens reality show that I think he did one, maybe two seasons of. And it's true that I don't approve of reality shows, like I don't like them. But I get it. I mean, he's, like, that's not really selling out. And he's still, like, even after he made, like, an insane amount of money by writing Scooby-Doo, he still came back and did a cameo free of charge in Toxic Avenger 4. Like, I respect the hell out of that. He's a good dude.
And even after the ton of money he made with the Scooby-Doo movies, he went and made really good films on his own. Slither, one of them. Super
the
being another.
Well, absolutely.
He made the specials, and he was Minute Man.
But Slither is terrific horror comedy, let's say.
It is. It captures the vibe of like the creature features. Like, it's sort of like a self-aware Critters.
Yeah.
Like it knows that it's not reinventing the wheel, so it kind of has fun with it.
Yeah, it's not horror comedy in the way that Shaun of the Dead is horror comedy.
Right. It's not out and out comedy. It's more horror than it is comedy.
And it's very dark comedy.
Like, I really liked it. The, oh my god, that scene with Brenda in the barn.
Oh, where she explodes?
Yeah.
What I've had to defend for it is people that didn't get that that it was supposed to have comedic elements. Like, mm-hmm. They're like, I heard this movie was supposed to be scary, and it wasn't scary. And I'm like, well, it wasn't really supposed to be scary. It was supposed to be... like a gross out feature with a nice dose of dark humor, and that was stupid. It's like,
Well, forgive me, but there were parts that were goddamn scary. I mean, the scene where Kylie is trying to get out of her house and her family is like surrounding the truck that she's holed up in.
Yeah, and the little kids.
Oh my god, the little kids.
Yeah, and they managed to kill kids in a movie, and that never happens anymore.
They did.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's that's like one of those sacred cows where it's like, if there's a kid in a movie now, they are indestructible. Unless it's a foreign film, then they are so dead.
Yeah, if it's a foreign film, like if it's from Pakistan, oh my God, they're dead men walking on their feet.
Or if it's Italian.
Yeah, Italian or France. Yeah, that little kid is as good as dead.
Yeah, and yep. Italian ones, though, you'll cheer when that kid dies. It's always the same kid with the same most annoying dub actor ever.
like the bad kid from Richie Rich. Like, that's what he sounds like.
Another thing about Slither is I like the song. I can't remember what it is, though.
There were two really good ones, one at the beginning and one at the very end. Are you talking about the end credits?
I'm talking about the romance song that Michael Rooker had for his wife.
Oh, that was Every Woman in the World.
Yes. It completely fits with the movie because you have all this horror and then it's playing this sappy 80s romance song.
Like a really sappy song.
As the mayor's eating a corpse.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh my God, I can never remember the actor's name, but the guy that played the mayor, I love that guy.
I'm blanking too, but he was awesome.
He was in that show that was on FX for like a season with Minnie Driver and Eddie Izzard, and then in Super, he was the cop that investigated that came to question Rainn Wilson. God, I always blank on that guy's name.
About,
yeah, okay. He's really funny though. Like the scene in Slither, Greg Henry. There you go. No. Yes, it was Greg Henry. Yes. I was thinking of Clark Gregg for a second. But no, that was Greg Henry. Love that guy. Like, his introduction in Slither is great when he's behind that car just honking, yelling at this guy, like I'm not going to say it on this show, but just unleashes this litany of obscenities at this guy who's blocking him. And then he looks up and he sees this woman standing next to a little girl, and the woman says, "Howdy, Mayor." He's like, "Hey, how y'all doing?"
And Elizabeth Banks is great.
Elizabeth Banks, this made me fall in love with Elizabeth Banks because, like, she's beautiful, she's funny, she can do horror, she can do action sequences. She can do no wrong. I like Elizabeth Banks.
Very, just naturally charismatic and funny and charming. And, yeah, I have yet to see... I've seen her in some bad movies, but she's never been bad.
Right, like Catch Me If You Can, for example. She only has barely a cameo as a bank teller in that movie, but she just steals that scene from DiCaprio. Same thing with the first Spider-Man. Wasn't she like? Didn't she work at the Daily Bugle?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, she did.
I believe so. Yeah, I really like her. Like, she made Zack and Mary make a porno for me. A lot of people don't like that movie, and that was my alternate. If for any reason, Jowski, you were going to ask me for another movie, that was going to be my alternate, because I really love that movie, and everyone else seemed to hate it.
Ah, that movie's hilarious.
I also liked Elizabeth Banks in The Hunger Games, even though I don't really like The Hunger Games.
Did not see The Hunger Games.
I didn't even know she was in The Hunger Games.
That is surprising. Hunger Games?
Oh, she plays this character named Effie that's like this... really snobbish, effective, aristocratic woman that's completely ignorant to the needs of poor people.
Oh, that's awesome. I can imagine it now. She would knock that out of the park.
She does, and she's like, ooh, poor people, kind of attitude.
I think one of the big things about Slither that I really liked was Michael Rooker.
He was awesome in most everything.
He was really awesome in this, like, because he can do, like movies like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, which is fine, but this is like monster villain, and he just captured it perfectly. Like the initial confusion, like when he first gets the slug in his body and it goes into his brain, next couple scenes that follow that, he's like confused by everything he sees, but he's trying not to let on. He just did that perfectly. And then later on when he starts to mutate more, he just, oh my God, he was really good in that. And Nathan goddamn Fillion.
Yes, Nathan Fillion.
I cannot imagine a better lead for this movie than Nathan Fillion. He's like the dude version of Elizabeth Banks. Like, yes. he's like handsome and he looks like a movie star, but he acts like you could be best friends with him. You know what I mean?
He does. Now, I think the big thing that another big thing Josh has against James Gunn is Josh didn't like Lollipop Chainsaw.
Oh.
Which was not a movie, but a game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yes, well,
and a very fun game. Okay. A very self-aware. It poked fun at itself, and it just went over a whole bunch of horror cliches, and it I thoroughly enjoyed it for what it was.
I think a video game might be too harsh of a reason to just like completely write off a dude who's a filmmaker.
Well, that and Josh and got into like a public argument with James Gunn because James Gunn commented on it on Facebook saying, "Well, I'm sorry you didn't like this script," and then Josh just out of nowhere is like, "F you, James Gunn," and they get in a fight.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know. His issues with James Gunn are his own to figure out. And you know what? We'll be here for him. We may never understand, but we don't have to.
And I like just about everything James Gunn's done too. Lolly Love is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, Lolly Love was great.
Super was.
I remember like Super really hit close to home for you. Like, I remember reading that review of yours.
Yeah, it did. Because I'm like, well, I went into Super expecting Kick Ass with Rainn Wilson, and no, it's like heavy-handed human drama about this lonely guy, and I was like, oh, this is really...
And it's got to be the most violent movie I've seen in at least 10 years. Like, just in terms of graphic gore.
And it's not fun gore. It's like, ah, no! They just blew Ellen Page's head off. This hurts.
I know, like, you think it's going to be really fun gore, but it does. It catches you off guard. Like, that's exactly how I would put it. Like, the scene with the guy that cuts in line. He hits him with the pipe wrench, and a good 2 seconds goes by, and then just his skull splits apart. That was just eerie.
Like, in most movies, if they hadn't developed the characters, you would be laughing at those. But with here, because it's so focused on his character and then Ellen Page's character, you feel really bad when that violence happens.
I remember that's what I told you after I read your review. So you said it hit really close to home. Are you talking about that time you were raped by Ellen Page?
And how awesome was Kevin Bacon?
Oh, Kevin Bacon was good. He was badass in that. So I think just like not only is Slither an underrated movie, but James Gunn is an underrated filmmaker.
He is. His PG pornos.
Oh, they're funny.
They are.
Oh, I heard about that. I've never seen one, but he takes like all the sex out of porn.
Well, he does. It's like the one I remember. This girl comes in to like get her car looked at by this mechanic, and it's set up like a porn scene. And he's like, "Well, let me whip out my tool," and he takes out a wrench. And the whole thing is double entendres like that. And like the punchline at the end is because she's got these puppies in her car, and it's double entendres where he's not going to have sex with her, and then he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna go fuck these dogs."
See, he's an original guy. I always appreciate that. And I mean, Romeo and Juliet, that was just sublime. I love Romeo and Juliet.
That's where I got to start.
Yeah. It was cool. Did you ever read the book where he talks about getting that job? Like, it was just one phone call from Lloyd?
Yeah, he did the, what was it, Everything I Know About Filmmaking I Learned from the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah.
He did like the foreword for that. It's one of my all-time favorite books. And yeah, it was awesome hearing him talk about that, and going into his love of trauma, and you can see a lot of that in Slither and in Super and whatnot, because I know Lloyd Kaufman was in he had a little cameo in Slither, but even though they are like they're a little more story heavy than trauma films, they still have like that little tinge of trauma feel to them. Because I just watched Slither not that long ago, and I'm watching it, and I'm just like, this has a trauma vibe to it. Like, this is what a trauma film would be like if they actually had a little bit more time and money to kind of develop it a little bit more, instead of, all right, we're going to make this on the quick and dirty and release it. And I love trauma films. It's one of those times where it's like, I really would love to see what a trauma film could be if maybe they put a little bit more into it.
Yeah. Like Slither looks like a movie that Lloyd Kaufman would make with a budget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Movie actually had a budget of $15.5 million.
And it looked better with some of the CGI they used mixed with practical effects. Mm-hmm. It looked a lot better than movies that cost way more than that.
Yeah, the practical effects, especially the makeup on the Grant character, I thought those were just awesome.
Yeah,
and that deer, awesome. The deer possessed by the slug, I loved that part.
Oh yeah,
that just looked so like cartoony, but it looked really good.
Well, I'm gonna tell him that that I saved you from the deer.
Yeah,
he's like, oh yeah, he saved me from the deer.
I don't know. I love Slither. Perfectly cast, perfectly written. It's a fun movie to me.
Yeah, it pays homage really well to movies like The Blob and whatnot.
In fact, there's even a scene where the chick that gets impregnated with all the slugs, when he goes to see her earlier, she's watching the Toxic Avenger on TV.
Oh yes, I remember that now.
It was the scene where Melvin rinses out the mop in the hot tub. There's one scene where Rob Zombie had a voice cameo in Slither. It's where Elizabeth Banks was talking to Grant's doctor.
Oh, when he said he got a bee sting, but...
Yeah, he said he went in to see the doctor, and then she called the doctor, and he goes, I haven't seen him in months. That was Rob Zombie's voice. I don't know, like, crap like that. Like, he knows, like, James Gunn has got to know that nobody is going to notice that except for a handful of people. But he still, you know, got a hold of Rob Zombie and asked him to come in and do it. Just for those few people. I respect that.
So do I. You know, that is, you know, paying tribute to your fans.
Yeah, he loves his fans. Like, you can't say he doesn't.
And which is quite a stark contrast from a lot of directors nowadays that they openly say that they hate their fans.
That's yeah, like, if you talk to Jar Jar Abrams about how he likes his fans.
Jar Jar Abrams.
that's what he is now.
That is what he is now.
Or Michael Bay is another one who just, well, he doesn't like anybody except himself.
But James Gunn really sticks up for his fans, and he treats them well.
Yeah, throws them bones whenever he can. I like that.
In fact, I even kind of like the Scooby-Doo movies, knowing that James Gunn did them.
I like how I can recognize the parts that James Gunn, like, was nervous about sneaking it past the studio.
Like, Kevin and I watched Scooby-Doo 2 few months back, and we were just laughing at it, and I'm like, I think that was James Gunn's intent.
Yeah, like when Shaggy's walking by and there's smoke in the corner of the frame, and he smells, and he's about to say something about pot, and then it's like a hamburger or something.
Not that the Scooby-Doo movies are really, like, spectacular.
No, they're not spectacular, but they're worth a one-time viewing just to see what sort of subversive stuff Gunn put into them.
And what? I loved his version of Dawn of the Dead. I mean, I know he didn't direct it, he wrote it, but still, like, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that is one of the, like, high water levels of remakes. It's one of the few to get it right.
In fact, when I watch Dawn of the Dead in theaters, and it pops up, you know, screenplay James Gunn, I'm like, is that the James Gunn that did Romeo and Juliet? He's he's moved on from that?
Yeah, he was, because Romeo and Juliet came first, then... I think the specials came between Romeo and Juliet and the first Scooby-Doo movie.
Yeah, it did.
And then after Scooby-Doo hit at the box office, because for whatever reason, Scooby-Doo was insane at the box office. Like, that movie was number one for a while. And then based on that, I think he landed the Dawn of the Dead remake.
And he did good with it.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I like the original better. I always will, just because it's frickin' Dawn of the Dead. But I like the remake. Like, I like the fortifying the shuttle buses, and it's weird. I mean, I don't know. People hold up in a shopping mall has a different, like, contextual meaning now than it did in the early 80s.
The scene where they're up on the roof and they're shooting celebrities.
Like Burt Reynolds and Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah, that the dark humor in that scene feels like something James Gunn would write.
And I liked it because it's one of my big things with remakes is... I like a remake that will take the basic idea and go in a different direction with it. Like, this was essentially, you know, people hold up in a mall and there's zombies. But you could watch both Dawn of the Dead, the original, and Dawn of the Dead remake and have two different experiences. Where so many remakes, they just try to do the exact same movie and it fails miserably. And yeah. It's like, why would you try to do the same thing again? Why not try to do something different? If you're going to go through all this trouble of remaking it, why just do the exact same thing? Just go back and watch the original.
And right. It explores the concept of a zombie baby without being ridiculous.
That pissed a lot of people off.
That didn't come later until this movie that came out maybe 5 years ago. I forget the name, but it was
Grace.
A trailer. Grace, yes, that's what it was. I did not. Did you see that?
I
yes.
saw that.
Oh, how was it?
Really good.
It is.
Very nice. Creepy.
That movie scarred Martha.
I remember that was a trailer when I got Teeth on DVD.
Yeah, with Grace, Martha was like, I need to stop breastfeeding now after she watched that.
Oh, because it was like chewing.
Yeah, like, and yeah. It like ate her breast off almost, and I'm like,
it was getting the blood, and yeah, it was a doozy.
Well, that's good, because if I recall, Martha couldn't be trusted with that sort of responsibility. Wasn't she like shooting you in the face or something?
Yeah, she was.
But, that's just an abuse of power. I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, Grace, I put on DVD, and she still shows it to people. She's like, this movie's so messed up.
Watch it!
But,
so I believe, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to mention about Slither before we wrapped up for tonight. I don't know, I might have to go watch that now, as soon as we're done recording tonight. You didn't see it until months ago?
No, yeah, I didn't see it until about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow. That's a long way to hold out for a movie like that. I couldn't do it.
Well, my Netflix DVD queue is just so crowded.
I imagine it is.
That I don't see it until it hits streaming.
So I guess if anyone listening to tonight's episode has any thoughts they'd like to share on any of the four movies we've discussed tonight, drop some comments on the podcast on www.geekjuicemedia.com. And we would like to discuss it, because I love the movies that we've discussed tonight. They're some of my favorites. So lay off them is what I'm saying, I think.
And next week we talk about Josh's movies. All I know offhand is Blair Witch 2, which...
Yeah. Oh my god, I can't believe that.
I'm going to be on Josh's side.
You really? Wanna be out? You're going to be here next week for this, Cecil?
What's next week's date? The 24th. I should be. I will give you a definite. I'd say by Monday.
Sounds good.
Awesome. I will. I'm actually going to start saying that now, Cecil. I'm definitely going to give you a definite definition.
And we will catch you all next week. Good night.
Yes. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the projection booth with Mike White. You won't regret it. Good night, everybody.
Is she really going out with him?